I think there's a real need for marketers and the partners of marketers to really get back to the kind of bigger point of view on marketing, which is about creating sustainable demand and really helping drive business growth by whatever means are necessary to go and do that, not just necessarily through the act of creating a piece of advertising communication.
Branding, experience, conversation, promotion. Powerful marketing. Empowering small business to change their status quo. It's the Internet Show, all about small business marketing. Jay Arrett hosts the brightest minds in marketing. Power, power to the power. Small business.
That's Gareth Kay, who at the time had just left Goodby Silverstein, and as you will hear him put it, is in stealth mode. But he no longer is. He's now founding partner at Zeus Jones San Francisco. Zeus Jones is a consultancy that specializes in brand work. I got a chance to hear Gareth's opening keynote on A Time for Radicals at the Bolo Digital Marketing Conference back in October in Scottsdale. And the question is, what's your approach to marketing? Do you think it's different? I think this is the episode of the big show that will help you decide if you really are a marketer who thinks outside the box, or maybe a marketer who just thinks they think outside the box. We're going to discuss with Gareth his concept of radical marketing and how maybe our roles as marketers should change. And I think some of you, as entrepreneurs who listen to the show and are doing your own marketing, will say, yes, that's how we do it anyway. It's a radical approach to marketing. Let's go. So who are you and what do you do?
Hi, Jay. Well, I'm Gareth Kay. I've actually just left Goodby Silverstein & Partners, where I was the chief strategy officer. And I'm currently in stealth mode, planning a new venture. I'm afraid I can't say much more than that at the moment.
Stealth mode, huh?
Yes. It sounds far more exciting than it probably really will be, but it's, you know, give me some glamour at least for a month.
Well, that's marketing, man. That's marketing.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, cool. I have to see Gareth's keynote address at Bolo 2013 in Scottsdale back in October. And what was that presentation, Gareth?
It was called A Time for True Radicals.
Of course, marketers, we always like to think we're radical, right? We always like to think we're trying the next best thing or we're radicals. I think once you see your presentation, you realize that, hey, maybe we're not as radical as we think we are. So let's just start off maybe by saying, hey, what is a radical to you?
Okay, yeah. So that's a great point. So yeah, you're right. I think it's human nature, particularly in the creative industries, to think that we are radical, because we tend to use that definition of radical as being, you know, something that's a bit different, a bit creative, a bit extreme, a provocateur, for want of a better word. And I think we feel we do that. But actually, I think there's a couple of things that suggest we're not really radicals in the true sense of the word. Firstly, I think we fell on that definition because, frankly, if Don Draper was teleported into the advertising world of 2013, I don't think he would see that much different. Yes, the techniques, the technology has changed, but actually the type of stuff that's being made is remarkably similar. But secondly, and perhaps more importantly, we tend to use actually the wrong definition or the secondary definition of the word radical. When you actually look at what radical means in the dictionary, it comes from the Latin word radix, which means root. And actually, radical is actually about really solving the problem at its root cause, a real fundamental problem. And I've got a personal premise that too much marketing nowadays it's almost kind of spent creating band-aids to be applied to the symptoms of a commercial problem, rather than really kind of burying down to understand what the real problem is we need to solve.
Well, let's take a look at our roles today as marketers. And what do you think is the true role of a marketing professional today? I'm talking consultancies, agencies, CMOs. What's our role in the business world today?
I think it's a good question. I think, you know, there's what our role is and what our role has been and perhaps should be. So I think let's take a thought about what our role has been and what it should be. I mean, really, marketing has been about the creation of sustainable demand. And it's done that through the kind of, you know, the four P's of price, promotion, packaging and place. I would argue that increasingly nowadays, chief marketing officers have almost become chief promotion officers, and really that's been the kind of focus of the work they do and the focus of the kind of marketing partners they work with. It's really about that kind of notion of, you know, messaging and communication. That's the lever they want to pull. And I think, you know, increasingly we're less obsessed about some of the other more fundamental levers of marketing, like the product itself, like how you might package up that product, and instead just jump to how I might promote something. And I think there's a real need for marketers and the partners of marketers to really get back to the kind of bigger point of view on marketing, which is about creating sustainable demand and really helping drive business growth by whatever means are necessary to go and do that, not just necessarily through the act of creating a piece of advertising communication.
So here, I guess, is where we are not really radical, because our model, the business model, just doesn't really allow for that, does it? I mean, we have our little separate silos and everything else like that. And so the product manager comes to the marketing director and says, hey, here's our product, now go promote it. Like you said, we're promoting it.
Yeah. I think you're right. I think it's very interesting to look at the kind of the evolution of the industry over the last 40 or 50 years. I mean, there was a time back in the 50s and 60s, and kind of Mad Men begins to hint at this, where actually ad agencies are pretty much kind of the outsourced marketing departments of big companies. They didn't really have a big marketing function inside, you know, inside their company. So the agency was really writing and developing the marketing plans, and they really were the kind of the architects of growth and demand for those companies. So there's kind of an interesting thing that happened, I think, to agencies and to partners when the marketing function got brought back inside clients, and they began to be, to your point, become much more siloed and specialized. But I think also inside client organizations, there's been a very interesting thing, perhaps triggered predominantly in Silicon Valley, where there's been the kind of the rise of the chief product officer. And so one of those really important, in fact, arguably the most important piece of marketing, has almost been, you know, fractured off and siloed away from the actual marketing suite. And I think that's just a really interesting change that's occurred. And that kind of bond between the product head and the marketing head, I don't think is as tight as it should be.
Yeah, and then you get this game of telephone, right? And then you add the agency onto it, and so it just becomes, in the end, something that's so disconnected. So I guess a radical approach then, Gareth, would be like, hey, do we need a chief marketing officer anymore? Is there something new that we need rather than a marketing officer and a product manager and
that's
something?
That's a heck of a thought, Jay. I mean, I think was an interesting thing that was happening in the Association of National Advertisers conference, which was, I think, a week before Bolo, kind of round the corner in Arizona. And they were talking a lot there. There was kind of, I think, Stephen Quinn, who's the CMO at Walmart, was talking about how he kind of felt that he was the chief innovation officer. I really think that perhaps a better definition of a CMO would be about being the chief growth officer. Really, their job is to think about how can they best grow a business, and how can they do that through creating demand. And I think that's really what we need in marketing now, is that real focus on how do we go and grow our business, and how do we kind of, you know, make us more valuable to more people.
Okay, so that brings up the topic then of brand building, which is a very popular topic within marketing. So what you hear a great deal about brand building. Two questions I guess I'm asking you is, how much really true brand building is there, and really is it the same going forward as it has been up to this point?
So again, great question. I think a brand is one of those great overly used words and often misused words in kind of marketing and business, because I think we have, you know, it becomes to mean the product or the communication, and there's nothing I hate more, frankly, than that kind of brief which goes, can we do a brand campaign for them, because everything you do is something that, you know, creates the impression in their mind about your company or product. That's kind of what a brand is. I kind of feel that nowadays there's far too much focus on, I suppose, the needs for kind of short-term creation of demand rather than building that sustainable long-term desire for a product and a brand. Because if you look at kind of the data, what you're seeing is things like McKinsey pointed to, is that, you know, CPG marketers at the moment are spending about $3 on price promotion for every dollar they invest in brand building. And that's a real worry because, you know why they're doing it, which is they kind of feel they see immediate return, quarter by quarter, rather than seeing that kind of long-term efficiency being built for the promotion they do. So I think there's a risk of this short-termism and really focusing on, quarterly results rather than building what should happen in the long term is perhaps really damaging to brand building. It's why I personally am a huge fan of someone like Jeff Bezos, who really believes in what the long-term vision and purpose is of Amazon and is prepared to turn around to the street and say, look, you may not be impressed by our quarterly numbers, but we're really happy with the progress we're making towards our long-term vision. And there's far too few CEOs who I think are prepared to say that to the street at the moment.
And you compare that approach to some of what other big companies think they are doing is brand building or brand advertising. The one that really gets me right now is, for some reason, maybe not everybody else, but the current Budweiser campaign, of course, beers are some of the worst at what they consider to be brand advertising, but it's only weird if it doesn't work. Like, that's Budweiser to me, really?
Yeah.
But we get into these, what we think we're so creative in marketing, right? But you had the statistics during the presentation about what the public really thinks about brands. Sure. and their advertising. Would you share that with us?
Yeah, of course. I mean, this is data that was collected by a consultancy called Copernicus, and they had two points which really scared me. The first goes, in 4 out of 5 categories, the American public see brands as being increasingly similar and homogenous, and that only 8% of Americans see a real difference between ads. So there's a real lack of differentiation being generated. So kind of job number one, which is make yourself feel different from your competitors, we're failing at. But I think perhaps more scarily and more worryingly long term, we're not really doing something that is seen as being of value or as being useful to people. So Havas Media Lab collected some survey data, I think last year, and that suggested that most Americans would be completely happy if about 4 out of 5 brands in the world that exist today disappeared tomorrow. and secondly, I think it was something around about the data point of about 5% of Americans think that brands are creating some kind of noticeable or positive contribution to their lives. So we're not really doing something that, from just a very simple human term, is really kind of creating value and meaning in people's day-to-day lives. And I think unless we solve that, we're going to get caught in that trap of the race to the bottom, which is, who can make something that's okay and comparable and sell it as cheaply as possible. And there's only so far you can go that way.
Of course, as marketers, we're saying, well, my brand must be one of those 5% that people think have meaning, right? That's the way we look at it. So let's take a different approach then. Let's take the radical approach to marketing. And why don't you give me your little radicalist manifesto?
Sure. But I mean, I think, the Radicalist Manifesto, I guess, falls really into kind of, I think, a number of kind of pretty straightforward principles. But maybe that's why they feel slightly odd, because they feel simple. Hopefully not simplistic, but simple. The first one is, I think, about being obsessed, actually, about, I suppose, the outcome we create rather than simply the output we make. And the kind of analogy I use for this is about being more obsessed about making hacks than making ads. Now, that sounds a really weird thing to say. What we should be doing is hacking, because when you think about that, I guess you tend to think of perhaps people who live outside the law, like Anonymous, like to go and break things and, disrupt websites and disrupt kind of your day-to-day life. Or if you're feeling really positive, the best you might think is they live exclusively in the domain of technology. But the interesting thing about the hack is defined as being the most ingenious and effective solution to a problem. And I think if we have to really kind of get back to that notion of what we have to do as an industry is really think about what is the best creative solution to a commercial problem, then that probably feels much more like a hack than an ad. There's frankly far too many times when we walk into the room and we may not say it, but we kind of are almost in our minds going, okay, here's the ad, now what's your problem? Or, here's the app, now what's your problem? And I think that gets in the way of, what is a real problem we're needing to solve. So I think, again, going back to understanding what is the real problem that we need to solve, and then find the best, most imaginative, most interesting and effective creative way to solve that feels like a really valuable thing we should be doing for clients. And that to me is kind of, about applying some of those principles of hacking, which is about, you know, breaking big problems into smaller parts. It's about really providing real collaboration between a small but diverse group of people. It's about working fast and not worrying so much about making things perfect. All those things, I think, are really, really important. So that's kind of, if you like, the first principle of kind of the Radical Manifesto. But I think perhaps the most important one in many ways is just that focus on the outcome rather than the output.
Two thoughts that come to mind. That we think we're focused on outcome because we say, okay, what's the ROI?
Yep.
And so we think we're on that. The other thing that comes to mind, as you were saying, is that we're not really set up to do what you just said because we have our little system and our formula for coming up with things. Mm-hmm. And what you're saying kind of requires not just a different way to do it this time, but maybe just about every problem we get to, we need to take a different approach to it.
I think you're right. I think the kind of the big danger about how we kind of, you know, backed ourselves into a corner in terms of compensation is there is two problems. Firstly, we have basically created kind of a factory. We need to continually feed that factory. So we do the work that is required to feed that factory, and we suggest the solutions that can come from that factory. But I think more importantly, because we're kind of building ourselves now on a time plus model more often than not, it means that, you know, we're basically incenting ourselves to basically work as slowly as possible with as many senior people as possible working on it. So it becomes quite a bloated process. And I think, you know, the agencies who are prepared to break the economic model and think about, okay, we want to do, you know, maybe something which is a project fee about a kind of a tightly scoped task or a tightly scoped outcome, and then really attach real reward in terms of, we believe, you know, we want to really tie our compensation to the performance of that idea out into the real world and attach the value that we earn to the value that we're creating for you. I think that becomes, you know, at least an economic model that begins to align the agendas of you know, marketers and their partners.
Wow, you must really be in stealth mode, Gareth, because I can imagine how that idea flies in some rooms.
Yeah, it's a difficult thing, isn't it? Where, you know, there's been that thing which is, you know, a common currency has emerged over time, and it's one that is frankly predictable and very easy to measure because you're measuring people's hours to make widgets. I just don't think that really allows us to be paid fairly for the economic value we create, and also creates, as I said earlier, kind of misincentives for agencies. It actually makes you want to work in ways that perhaps aren't in the best interest of being efficient or effective. So I think there's real need to go and do that. And that's one of the big issues I think facing the industry is how can we begin to look at new ways of being compensated for the right things rather than being compensated for the wrong things.
Okay, so that's the first part, outcome versus output.
Second part is really around kind of, I think, a desire for experimentation. It kind of flows from the notion of hacking, which is around really thinking about, rather than trying to be always kind of following this kind of pointless quest of perfection, it's about really experimenting and putting stuff out into the world and learning about it. And one of the observations, you know, I think you have inside the industry after a while is we probably spend the great majority of our time on kind of the last 2% of the work. It's like trying to make the absolute perfect looking comp or the perfect looking piece of, you know, film. And there's no doubt I'm a big, big believer in the importance of craft, but I think we take it to the nth degree. And I think there's a reality which goes, look, it's much better to go and put some things out into the world that are in a good enough shape for people to react to and get a sense of how they work, scale up behind the things that work and kill off the things that don't. And that may sound like kind of a software development approach, but it's something that works in culture too. As a fantastic quote by Lorne Michaels, who's the producer of Saturday Night Live, and he said, look, the show doesn't go on. The show never goes on because it's ready. It goes on because it's 11:30 at Saturday night. And just that notion of having a deadline that makes them work towards something. And they know the show will never be perhaps perfect. There'll be some things that are better than others. But if they didn't have that kind of force of a deadline to make them just get something out into the world, there probably would never be an episode made of that show so far because you'd be noodling, you know, the last 1%. So I think it's about kind of a change in stance and really thinking about how can you place lots of little bets out into the world. And that's something that's that's really important to help you break away from just replicating what you do today.
I love the Saturday Night Live reference because it's such an iconic piece of our society, and they put out stuff that's just not very good sometimes. Sometimes the skit's a dud, right? But the public is forgiving because they know we're going to get a Wayne's World or the Blues Brothers. At some point, we're going to get one of those things in amongst all this other stuff that doesn't quite work.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's kind of, I think that's part of the, in a funny way, the joy of the show, and I think it's kind of an interesting thing. And that's, you know, a model that to me is really interesting. I think it also ties in to the ability to actually really break away from just doing the stuff that is the bread and butter of a day-to-day of business. There's an interesting kind of thing they have at Google where they talked about how they allocated their resources, both in terms of time and budget. And they had this 70-20-10 model, of which 70% was allocated on the bread and butter of today. 20% was allocated on, I guess, kind of, you know, near field evolution of ideas, looking at, you know, what could be new ways of the brand coming to life. And then 10% was spent on the stuff that was around, I guess, the next iteration, what's going to be coming, you know, down the line in 3 to 5 years. And out of that kind of 30% of time that they cut away, really important things like Gmail and Chrome and even AdWords, which frankly is the kind of monetary engine of Google nowadays, those are all born from that time. And it's not just something that's been found to work in Google. It's also been found to work across companies in America. Some research done by the Harvard Business Review that suggests that those companies who split their resources in this way outperform their competition in terms of kind of share performance over the last decade, but also that 10% of time actually generates 70% of your medium to long term return on investment. And so that's the stuff that's actually going to become your bread and butter of tomorrow. And I think we're just not very good at thinking about how can we break away from what we do. And we are, I guess, you know, we've kind of hit the innovator's dilemma where we're finding imaginative ways to do what we've always done before, rather actually looking for new ways, truly new ways, to apply our skills and talents to generate real new commercial ideas.
We've talked before, you and I talked about this notion of the hackathon, mm-hmm. and this is where we get to maybe work with people we haven't worked before, yeah. and new dynamics in which yeah. we haven't worked, to come up with stuff that we've not ever thought of before.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, it's that thing of, you know, put different – it's that thing which I guess which is, you know, different ideas demand that you put different people together working in different ways. Yet if you look at how an agency tends to work, or even frankly a client organization tends to work day in, day out, by and large, they work with the same people in the same way. One third and final point I would just suggest would be – and this is not meant to sound condescending or stupid, but I just think we forget about it, which is – make sure we put people first. And I mean people, not just consumers, but real human beings. Because, you know, I really feel that sometimes we are just the most narcissistic industry where we look at award shows for inspiration. We do things like make behind-the-scenes films of our latest adverts, like it's for next Tarantino movie. it's just, you know, it's kind of slightly bizarre view of the world. And the reality is, and that data earlier I think suggests this, is sadly, most people don't care about your brand, and we certainly don't care about its communication as much as we do. So really thinking about what are people's lives like nowadays? What are some of the things they love and some of the things they find painful in their life? And think about what is the role that your brand can play in making life just a little bit better and making stuff that they genuinely really care about and want to be engaged with. And thinking nowadays about ideas being a bridge between their world and yours, between what they're passionate about and what your kind of competence is, can lead to ideas that perhaps will just make you a bit more meaningful, a bit more valuable, and therefore really create growth for your organization.
You brought up the point during your presentation about narcissism, and it's prevalent, obviously, within the marketing industry because we are the creatives, and sometimes we like to think we like set the course for the yes. future a little bit with our ideas. And so putting these people first, it's we take a look at, say, the big data, and we say, okay, here's what the people are doing, so let's create something that goes along with that, rather than diving into the true, you know, the individual soul and figuring something out that way.
Rather just pushing stuff at people that they have no interest in whatsoever. It's much better to kind of, you know, go with the grain and swim with the flow, as they always say, you know, than go against it. And to your point, there's lots of data nowadays you can kind of capture that really helps you understand how the world is and what people care about. But frankly, you know, one of the things I've always found in my career to be the most useful is do things like be interested in culture and be interested in the world around you. And, you know, go for walks, take public transport, be one of those slightly annoying kind of eavesdroppers in coffee shops and just hear about, you know, the kind of the general pattern of life. And you'll begin to kind of hear some themes emerge that maybe just gives you a sense about, you know what, this project I'm working on, we could do something that really helps address this issue or really leans into this thing that people really care about. And suddenly, I think you have an idea that people are much more willing to accept, and therefore you begin to create a platform for a brand that really allows you to grow over not just the short term, but more importantly, over the kind of medium to long term.
Well, that sounds like a radical approach to marketing to me, Gareth. So if people want to keep up with you during your stealth mode, where can we go? Where can we find out more?
The best bet is always, probably nowadays, is follow me on Twitter, which is @GarethK. So GaretheK.
All right. I'll put links to that as well as to Gareth's presentation at Bolo up in the show notes on the website. Hey, Gareth, thanks for being our guest here today.
Hey, Jay, thanks for taking my time so much. It's been great to talk to you, and thanks everyone for listening.
Gareth Kay, founding partner of Zeus Jones San Francisco. So what do you think? Are you trying to just throw ads at the problem, or are you a radical marketer? Are you hacking your way through problems, solving things at the root? Questions every marketer, I think, needs to answer. But also from a business owner's point of view, are you allowing marketers a seat at the problem-solving table? Or perhaps are you just more comfortable with them in their silo? Complete show notes and links are up on the website, thepowertothesmallbusiness.com. Leave a comment, make a suggestion, vent, but be sure that you subscribe to the podcast either by email or feed reader so that you never miss another podcast featuring some of the most interesting minds in marketing.
You've been listening to Power to the Small Business with Jay Arendt, the internet show exclusively about small business marketing. Please see the complete show notes at themarketingspot.com. You can also listen to the show online and subscribe in iTunes at powertothesmallbusiness.com. Never miss an episode of the internet show all about small business marketing. Power to the small business.
Our thanks to Mary Lynn Foster of The Big Success Show for the opening and closing credits of the podcast. You can find Mary Lynn at The Big Success Podcast, BIGGSuccess.com.